Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. Before I launch today's exposition, I want to make our listening audience aware of not only the books that I have authored, but some articles that I have written that you might be interested in, and tell you how to access them. Over the years, I have done a good deal of writing, as time allows, to prepare resources that I think should be helpful. So grab a pen and paper and get prepared to write down a website. If you will go to jimandrewsbooks.com, that's one word, jimandrewsbooks.com, you will find there information describing the books I have authored, one of them co-authored with my daughter. In fact, that book, The Finality of Jesus Christ, is not a long book, but it's a very important book, and if anybody will let the Scriptures answer their questions about whether there are many ways to God, this will be decisive. Another very important book I've written is Polishing God's Monuments, Pillars of Hope for Punishing Times. I've written a book on marriage. Should help a lot of people if both are serious about walking with God in their marriage, Marriage Without Remorse, Rules for the Road. And finally, one about the pastoral ministry would be good for elders and leaders, too. Dispatches from the Front Lines, Reflections on the Glory and Grind of Pastoral Ministry. On top of that, on the same website, you'll see a tab that says Articles. If you will open that with your cursor, you will discover there some articles that I've produced over the years that you may find interesting and helpful. For example, one of the most recent articles was my take on the demise of the culture wars and where I think we ought to go from here. Another article that appeared several years ago in a journal for biblical manhood and womanhood is entitled Boundaries Without Bonds. Another is a rebuttal of a tract that appeared several years back. The author attempted cleverly, but as I will show unsuccessfully, to persuade us that the Scriptures do not condemn homosexual practice after all. That has all been a misunderstanding. Well, there will be others, but I mentioned those three. I'm not a regular blogger, but when sometimes things pop up on my radar that I feel I would like to address in a thoughtful way, I will sometimes produce a longer article like some of these. So I'm just happy to share them with you for whatever benefit they may have. Now, back to our current study. We continue our exposition of the book of Exodus, most particularly the narrative portions about God's great work in delivering the Israelites from Egypt and from the hand of Pharaoh through Moses. In the narrative, the Israelites are now about 3 months into their wilderness experience. They've arrived at Sinai, where shortly God will give Moses the law on top of Mount Sinai. But right now, we have a narrative about Moses and his father-in-law by the name of Jethro, elsewhere called Reuel. He was the chieftain and priest of the Midianites. Reuel, to abbreviate the narrative, is watching Moses in action, and he's a very wise man that God providentially sent, no doubt, to give Moses counsel. He observes that Moses is wearing himself out in judging the people, sitting from daylight till dark, basically, and he has not delegated the labor, he's not distributed as would be wise in order to preserve himself and the people. We read in verse 24, "And so Moses listened to his father-in-law, and he did all that he had said," and that captures my attention right there. Moses listened. I was saying, as our last program was winding down, that over the years as a teacher, a mentor, and a pastor, One of the critical qualities I often look for in people is whether or not they have ears, and more so as time has marched along. I want to know, when people seek counsel from me, are they teachable? Are they amenable to counsel or correction, or they just want to hear what they want to hear, or are they the kind who know it all? I find pigheadedness is deplorable at any age. But I was saying that few things set my hair on fire, especially in the ministry, like a 25- or 30-year-old know-it-all who is so all-wise that he wants to mentor his elders, people who perhaps have forgotten more about life and the ministry and have forgotten more generally than that person has ever learned. But you can't tell them that. It's not that they don't know anything. It's not that they don't have anything to contribute. In fact, they very well may, and often should be listened to respectfully like others. But the problem with that type is that in their arrogance, they are blind to their relative ignorance. I've often said, woe be to those who are cursed to succeed in some endeavor too young. For that early rise to premature success is often the precursor to a humiliating fall down the road. So I've learned to test people on this quality before I waste too much time in trying to mentor them. I'll tell you about one who passed the test. I've often told this story, and if you've listened to this program over the years, you've probably heard it because I tell it in more than one context. It's one of my favorite harvested stories from all of my ministry. I remember when I went to teach at Western Seminary in 1980, I was given, like the rest of the faculty, a cadre of students, and I was to be their advisor. That's just pro forma. At least it was when I was teaching. In among those students was a guy by the name of Art. Art was a fundamentally handsome guy who looked like he had just gotten off the back of a big Harley. California boy, who else? With a great shock of bushy black hair and dark, radiating eyes, and a huge personality. Well, we hadn't gotten too far into the year, and Art had gotten a job as an assistant coach at one of the local high schools. One evening, somebody invited me to go to a game out in the east part of town to watch their son play. So there I was, out in the stands on a Friday night, just about the 50-yard line. And it came halftime, and, you know, kind of like the seventh-inning stretch in baseball, everybody gets up, some go gather refreshments, and others talk to friends, and some people just stand around, walk around. And I didn't have any place to go and didn't know anybody, so I just sort of stood up and stretched myself and turned around to see what people were doing, and I looked back in the stands to what would have then been my left, and I saw a cluster of fellas up there. Some looked like they might be coaching types, and others look like they might be student types. I couldn't tell which. But I saw clipboards and that sort of thing, and then all of a sudden, I espied one guy, and it was my student Art. So I said, well, what do you know? Clear out here. There's Art. So I started clambering up the bleachers there, headed in a diagonal direction, when all of a sudden I saw something. I saw Art there with a clipboard in one hand, and in his right hand, I saw a cigarette. Well, look, it wasn't like I saw a guy snorting coke or something like that, but here was a young man training for the ministry, and that just really disappointed me. I saw his right arm shoot down, because he saw me headed that way about that time, and go down to his right leg where he kind of hid the cigarette, and I didn't want to embarrass him. So I just yelled out to him. I was about halfway. Hey, Art, good to see you. Didn't know you were out here. You know, just a few banalities like that. And then turned around and went back to my seat. Now, this whole story has to do about listening, in case you've lost me. That was the weekend, Friday night. Monday, I got to school, and I saw Art near my faculty mailbox one day, which was right near the student lunchroom. Jim, how are you? All that sort of thing. I said, hey, Art, I've been thinking about you. He said, what's that? And I said, you know, Art, I just feel impressed to tell you something, brother. I said, you're going to have to decide whether you want to burn for God or merely smoke. He said, what? I said, you think about it. And if you can't figure it out, see me later. Well, we went on. It was about a week, I guess. I jumped into what was then my little Datsun B210, was shooting out of the parking lot heading wherever I was going. And I heard, "Prof, prof, prof," and my window was down. So I hit the brakes, backed up a little bit, and here came Art, running out the sidewalk from the library. He was just ready to enter when he saw me headed out. He said, "Man, I have been trying to figure out what on earth you meant when you said what you did to me the other day, that you need to decide whether you're going to burn for God or merely smoke." Well, right there it told me that he was interested. He took seriously what I said, and he wanted to understand. That was a very, very good sign. So then I explained to him what I had seen, and I said, "Art, this is not the moral issue of the 20th century. This was the last century. I understand that, but I understand that's not what people are going to expect of their pastor. Oh, I know Spurgeon spoke to pipe and all that stuff. Don't give me any of that rot. You know what I mean. So I think you've got it. You really think it's that serious?" I said, "Well, if you want to know, I really do. I think it'll compromise your ministry. So you need to think about that." Well, I'll tell you, he did. And I'll tell you that we got the result that I hoped for. Wise men give good advice. Wise men listen to good advice. Wise men usually learn where they can find good advice. So Moses listened to his father-in-law. That says a world about Moses. And did all that he told him, because it was advice mediated from the Spirit of God. Note Moses' humility and leadership. He listened. Now, don't get me wrong here, folks. Many people who would be our counselors are not fit to be listened to. If they are not fools, their advice is at least foolish. We do have to be discriminating. We have to screen out those who think they are wise and are not, or screen out those whose counsel contains an element of self-interest or some agenda. You'll often run into that. Those we can and should, with profit, safely ignore. My point here, as we look at this example of Moses' interaction with Jethro and Moses listening to Jethro, my point is simply that a leader should be smart enough to listen thoughtfully and carefully to any well-intentioned person, and humble enough, whatever their station, to receive their counsel, if it has merit. It never speaks well for us if we are too proud to listen, or too uppity to listen only to those whom we regard as peers. Moses was not that kind of proud leader. Some leaders, many leaders, in fact, fail because they won't listen to anybody. Others fail because they listen too much and won't listen to the wisdom that God has given them, or they listen to the wrong people. I know a pastor in another state, I say this, wouldn't mention him for the world, a good man, an honorable man. But everybody that knows him, has been close to him, says that his downfall was that he listened to too many people, and he got conflicting advice, and he just waffled and went back and forth and back and forth, and didn't listen to his own God-given instincts. I made up my mind a long time ago that if I'm going to fail, I would rather fumble the ball by listening too much than listening too little. It's not good to do either, but I would prefer to fail on that side of the equation by listening too much than listening too little. In my lifetime, I have seen enough headstrong leaders who consider it a point of pride to be impervious to deflection by anyone's objection or counsel to the contrary. So I made up my mind early on that I positively deplore that kind of pig-headedness, and I never want to emulate it. My own leadership, I will freely testify, has by no means been an error-free zone. Nevertheless, I take some comfort in the fact that my errors, so far as I recognize them, have come almost always from listening too much to others' opinions and not following my own God-given gut. It's a pretty good gut, generally. Still, on balance, I would prefer my memory to be marred by that habit any day than the other that cannot listen to anyone. By the way, I should add this footnote, this thing about listening, and all of this has to do with Moses listen to his father-in-law. Smart thing, because his father-in-law Jethro, here in Exodus 18:24, gave Moses very good, God-directed advice, and Moses was smart enough to listen. I said, part of wisdom is knowing who to listen to. Some people don't understand that. You will often hear people say, well, just take myself, for example, and say, well, Jim won't listen to anybody. I don't hear that very much. But I have heard it over the course of my ministry, and generally that comes from somebody who assumes that simply because they had an opinion and they came to you and you let them voice that opinion and you did not elect to go with that opinion that somehow you're stubborn and you will not listen. It never seems to occur to them that somehow you did respectfully listen to that opinion. You waited against what you know and what your own instincts are and what others have said. And in the final analysis, you decided that their wisdom was not as good as the other wisdom you had. Nothing perfect about that, of course, but a leader has to do that. So it does not mean that a leader doesn't listen when they reject your advice, which you think is so infallible. You might be right, but then again, you might be wrong. So that's not a test of whether somebody listens. Well, we see in verse 26, and they judge the people at all times. The judicial system set up by Moses on the advice of his father-in-law Jethro had the advantage, the wonderful advantage of expediting justice. Disputes not resolved in a reasonably timely fashion. Folks, they're as unhealthy and unsightly in a social body as are festering sores in a physical body. Prolonged postponement of remedies seeds a community with frustrations, factions, and a distraction of its energies. It's not only in a church, but that's especially in a political body as well. Well, in verse 27, then Moses bade his father-in-law Jethro farewell. Jethro went his own way into his own land or territory. Now, in there is a truth in microcosm in our walk of faith. When in our lives we have a special need, the Lord will cause our paths to intersect with someone He has providentially prepared to fill that need, to be our source of supply. We may not need them forever, and the Lord does not always send them to us as a permanent resource or fixture. He may send them to us only for a moment or for a brief but critical time. Such was the case with Jethro. I remember way back, and this has to do with the final word, this very program that you're listening to. Initially, when we started the final word, we were on the hook for a lot of money. So my wife and I felt the burden, and we were spending of our own money thousands of dollars. We had a couple of people who put up the total amount needed for 1 year, and it was an amazing story. If you ever want to hear it, I'll send it to you. Just let me know, but it's an amazing story of how the Lord provided exactly what we needed for 1 year. That was the hand of God. But then as we moved on into the next year, as I recall, it was the very next year, those monies were spent. Some money was coming in, but as you notice, we do not make major appeals on this program for people to send us money. There's nothing wrong with that, and I do not condemn anybody else. But that's just not something that I feel all that comfortable with. My wife had not been telling me, but we were coming to the point where we could no longer afford the thousands of dollars that we were spending. We had property taxes coming due and all that kind of thing, and it was going to be tight, but I didn't know this at the time. About that time, a man came to our church. He was about 45. He had heard me on the final word and was very enthusiastic about the radio program. Came to the church. He and his wife decided they loved the church. He was a major executive with a big future here with a national corporation in Portland. And so they invited us over to their fine home for a dinner one evening, and something came up about the radio program, and I remember Joe said, well, that's what we invited you for. We wanted to talk about just that. That may be why I'm even here. He said, my wife and I would like to support you in that, and they gave us a gift. And to tell you the truth, I'm trying to remember, need my wife here, but I'm trying to remember, I think it was a gift of about $20,000. Just wrote us a check to support the program. That was huge. And my wife just began to tear up. And then she told me later, or she told them, that's when she told me, just the crisis point that we had reached and God provided. Well, they were here for a couple of years, and then they went on to Tennessee. That's what I'm talking about. Jethro came into Moses' life for a certain period of time. He didn't stay. He went back to his own people. God will do that when we have a need. Sometimes he'll send somebody along, and they're not going to be a permanent fixture in our lives, but they arrive at a very critical point, and they do what God has given them to do. And in this case, it was to give Moses some good advice for which God had equipped Jethro to give. I imagine that many of you, just as I can survey your past, and you come up with individuals whom God has sent to cross your path, just like Jethro, at a very impressionable or a very needy time. Someone who providentially brought you timely wisdom, support, or resources when you most needed them. It's even possible that they were not even believers. What? Yeah, just as in a much later point in her history, servants of God like Joseph, Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, Mordecai, and Esther. Why, in the providence of God, they found unlikely friends and helpers for God's mission in pagan monarchs whom God had prepared for the moment of need. Jethro was one such person for Moses at a critical moment. And when he had returned Moses' family to him, namely Moses' wife and sons, and imparted the timely administrative wisdom Moses sorely needed at this moment in the providence of God, we see he went away to his own land. You know, folks, if you want to appreciate the providential hand of God in your life, you want to boost your faith in trying times, I got a little exercise for you. Just rummage back through your past and see how many times the Lord has put somebody like that, some Jethro, briefly in your path. It may have been a teacher, a pastor, a coach, an associate, a roommate, now long moved on. But in looking back, you know very well that that person was to you what Jethro was to Moses, a divine appointment. And I've had that same experience. People come and go in our lives, and then, like Jethro, they go back to their own country. But their providential influence and input, well, it lives on. And you know, folks, that is just part of the beauty and the adventure of walking with God. Those people that God, like Jethro, puts in our paths. I had a college professor. He didn't know the Lord from a bunny rabbit. He was a tough, tough guy. He was a legend on our campus. He was the terror of, all engineering students and any others who didn't have a healthy respect for the English language. I didn't know that God had put him there. I could tell you story after story of what this man did for my life. But he adopted me. God caused him to. And God used that man to turn my whole life around intellectually. I was never the same after I sat under his tutelage at West Virginia Institute of Technology. But he was tough with me. But he was wise. And whatever I am today, on the intellectual side of my life, I owe to that man that God placed in my path like Jethro. I went my own way, he died, but his influence lives on in the providence of God. Look at those things and see the hand of God all over your life in secret places that you perhaps have forgotten, and it'll just give you a charge as it gives me a charge. Well, friends, join us again next time on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.